This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Over the last decade, the Kalamazoo Promise has inspired much discussion, some research into how it works, imitators across the country, and now at least two books. Michelle Miller Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo and also a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. She wrote The Power of a Promise, published in 2009. Miller Adams' latest book, available through the Upjohn Institute website, is called Promise Nation, Transforming Communities Through Place-Based Scholarships. Michelle Miller Adams, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon, for inviting me.
What can we say for certain now 10 years after the announcement of the Kalamazoo Promise?
That's a hard question, but one thing we can say for certain is that the Kalamazoo Promise has been a really powerful inspiration to lots of different kinds of communities around the country to try something similar. I think that's one of the biggest surprises of the Promise, that it has spawned this population of dozens of place-based scholarship programs. And they're all different, but they resemble each other in certain respects. So I thought in this book, it made sense to try to take a crack at studying them as a group.
And as people hear this, it is possible that PromiseNet will be going on right as this is going across the airwaves in Kalamazoo, which is people gathering from around the country and talking about the various ways that they have developed place-based scholarships, right?
Right. This will be the seventh meeting of PromiseNet, I think. We've been in Kalamazoo three times previously. We've also been in Pittsburgh, New Haven, and Denver. It's a really interesting initiative. I can't call it an organization because there is no organization. This is a grassroots, bottom-up, self-organizing networking opportunity for people around the country who are attempting to transform their communities and their schools through place-based scholarship programs. And it is organized by the community that's hosting it. We've got about 170 people coming to town from literally all over the country for 2 to 3 days of conversation.
As these other communities have started their own program, what differences do you see? How do different communities get at the idea of a promise, and how do they do it in ways that are maybe not quite like what we have in Kalamazoo?
Right. So I've given this a lot of thought because quite literally every one of these programs differs in some specific points. I've tried with my colleagues and my own thinking to create some categories, ways of thinking about this population of promise programs. And I think they vary along two key dimensions. The first one is which students are covered. And the second one is which post-secondary schools they can attend. Now, Kalamazoo has this very generous, long-term, flexible program where basically if any student meets the minimal 4-year enrollment and residency requirements, they will get a scholarship. And they can use it to attend now one of 59 public and private institutions in the state of Michigan. That is both what we would call universal in terms of the students who are covered, and then expansive in terms of where they can go to school. You also have programs that are targeted towards certain groups of students. Most often, these have various merit requirements, usually GPA requirements, often attendance requirements, sometimes community service requirements. Occasionally, there will be targeting on the basis of financial need, but interestingly, that is not the dominant approach in these place-based scholarship programs. And on the other dimension, where students can go to school, there's one program that's even more flexible than ours. The El Dorado Promise lets students take their scholarship at the maximum in-state public tuition rate and use it anywhere in the country. But many programs limit use of the scholarship to a local community college or a group of local community colleges. So across those two dimensions, which students can use the scholarship, where they can take it to attend their post-secondary education, those are really critical variables. There's obviously also the issue of funding, but most of these programs are funded through some combination of philanthropy, generous individual donors, generous business donors. There's not a lot of public funding of place-based scholarship programs. There's a little bit, but not a lot.
When we interviewed Tim Bartik, who was also a colleague of yours at the Upjohn Institute, recently published research about the educational effects of the Promise, along with a couple of other Upjohn Institute researchers, one of the things he made a point about is that if you were to have a program which requires a 3.5 GPA and says you can take your scholarship to a community college, he questions whether that's truly a promise-like program. When you're drawing the boundaries around what you consider a true promise-like program, are there some things where you think after a while it really does not equate to what is being done in Kalamazoo, or it's so far from it that you really don't consider it in the same universe?
Right. So I've tried to come up with a definition of promise programs that will encompass this broad degree of variation, but also has something meaningful about it. And for me, I guess the important thing is to look at the intention or the goals of the creators or the stakeholders in these programs. So for me, promise programs are about more than just sending more students to get a higher education. They have some transformative element, and usually that includes transformation of the school district to try to build what people often call a college-going culture, increase college knowledge, college readiness, and also at some level to transform the community by making the community more attractive, by making it a stronger magnet for people who care about education to move in, about aligning the community around education as a central piece of the economic development strategy. So I look for those transformative elements. And most of the programs that we look at do include seeking to increase access to higher education, seeking to transform the K-12 school district, and seeking in some way to transform the community. Now, some of them, their program rules, the one you mentioned is, you know, particularly extreme example, and it's a real example. They really don't make sense given those transformative goals. Most promise programs, about half of them are universal in terms of eligibility. The other half have some kind of usually merit requirement. It's usually more like a 2.5 or a 2.0 GPA cutoff. I am a big fan of universal programs because if you are really trying to expand opportunity and if you limit the program to the higher achieving students, you are, because of the nature of our educational system, cutting out a disproportionate number of low-income and usually minority students. So those programs tend to serve the students who are already headed to a post-secondary education.
One of the things you come back to several times in Promise Nation is the idea that the Kalamazoo Promise is simple, that is a strength of the system. But is there a trade-off between simplicity and, say, trying to target lower-income students who would be the ones who would probably not go on to college without a program like this? Whereas you say, some of the other students who benefit were likely to go to college anyway.
Universal programs tend to be simpler. The trade-off is really financial. There is some money that the Kalamazoo Promise is spending sending students to college who would have gone anyway. I would argue that there's still tremendous benefits to those students. Perhaps they're getting to attend a more selective, more expensive institution. Perhaps they're graduating with less debt. Perhaps they'll be able to now go on to graduate school with some student loans. So there are some positive benefits. There is some positive benefits to the spending, but the lack of targeting that you mentioned is a concern to a lot of people. A lot of people from the student financial aid field really believe that financial aid should be targeted on the basis of need. And we do have an extreme example of that in the federal Pell Grant program, where it's very much targeted toward people below a certain income level, but it's also extremely hard to apply for. I'm sure all of our listeners know and have heard about the complexities of filling out the FAFSA. A great deal of student financial aid is left on the table because of those barriers to entry. So for me, one of the attractions of simplicity, the fact that the Kalamazoo Promise application fits easily on one piece of paper, can be filled out by a student, him or herself, is that it lowers not just the financial barrier, but it lowers the barrier to accessing financial aid. So it brings down multiple barriers to higher education, which really does improve the uptake among low-income students. And my colleague's data does bear that out. The Kalamazoo Promise is being used across all demographic groups, across all income groups at roughly the same level. Now, students from different demographic groups are attending different types of institutions, but the barriers to entry are low. So I'm a big fan of simplicity. If you can't explain your program in a couple of sentences, maybe 20 seconds, there's going to be a lot of confusion about it. And I think Bob Jorth at the Kalamazoo Promise would tell you that even with the simplicity of the Kalamazoo Promise, there's still confusion. There's still a tremendous amount of effort that needs to go into messaging and clarification and answering questions. There's an appeals process. I think the Kalamazoo Promise hears about 40 appeals a year. With a more complex program, you're really multiplying that communication challenge and, of course, your number of appeals as well.
To play devil's advocate, the guy who is trying to get some sort of place-based scholarship in any town USA may not have donors quite as generous or as wealthy as the ones who have supplied the money for the Kalamazoo Promise and may say, I've got limited resources. If I've got to pick and choose what I'm going to do with it, I'd rather help that student who is not likely to go to college because the cost is going to get in the way. Is there anything wrong with that argument?
No, this is what I would recommend to those people. And in fact, this is what I recommend to those people. Create a universal scholarship program that allows students to do their first 2 years of post-secondary education tuition-free at a community college. Your upper-income students are not likely to go to that local community college. They may go off and use their family resources or take out loans, but your lower income students are going to be able to attend a local community college tuition free, get a high value certificate or an associate's degree, possibly transfer on to a 4-year institution. Your middle income students too will often choose to attend a community college for their first couple of years of education, really cuts down on the cost of that higher education. Those programs are extremely low cost to operate. The reason, of course, is that federal financial aid for low income students covers the entire cost of tuition. There's a program in Detroit called the Detroit Scholarship Fund. Detroit Scholarship Fund. It's operated out of the Chamber of Commerce, and it guarantees that every student graduating from Detroit Public Schools can attend one of 5 regional community colleges for free. They've had a big boost in students who are going off to those community colleges, and the program, because most of the students coming out of Detroit Public Schools do qualify for Pell Grants, it operates at almost no cost. So that's what I would recommend. Keep it universal, but limit attendance to community colleges. And of course, you need a tight partnership with those community colleges. You often need to invest resources at the level of those community colleges to help them support student success once those students get to the community college.
What is a first dollar scholarship program and why is that important?
A first dollar scholarship program, and I'm glad you brought this up because this is not widely understood. A first dollar scholarship program is awarded to the student before other forms of financial aid. And it basically brings new money to the table. The Kalamazoo Promise is the first financial aid applied for students. If they also qualify for federal Pell Grants, if they also get a merit or needs-based scholarship from an institution, those get added on top. For low-income students eligible for the Kalamazoo Promise, they are close to having their entire college costs paid for, including room and board, including some of those other costs like books and computers. Last-dollar scholarships, which many of these place-based scholarships are calculated after federal financial aid is awarded. And in other states, we have state needs-based aid as well, not here in Michigan, sadly. But the promise funding kicks in after other forms of financial aid, so it brings less new money to the table, and it doesn't enable students to get basically all of their college costs covered. And it's something that promise program designers really need to think about, where the benefits are falling based on this first versus last dollar structure. Unfortunately, there are very, very few programs that are first dollar programs. It's just about the most expensive way to structure a scholarship program. And because of the resource issue that you mentioned, very few communities do it. It's one of the ways in which Kalamazoo is deeply, deeply fortunate.
One of the things you write about in the book Promise Nation is that, yes, several communities almost immediately after the Kalamazoo Promise was announced said, okay, this sounds like a great idea. We're going to do our own version. But some of those never really got off the ground, never became full-blown scholarship programs. What happened? How come there were some places that never could really make this work?
It's different from community to community, but I would say that if I had to pick one reason, oddly enough, it's not the money. It is the process by which a community embraces a scholarship program. It's in the book, I call it community alignment. Sometimes I call it community engagement. Many of these efforts were not deeply rooted in stakeholders across the community. Kalamazoo is very unusual. This program was developed, cooked up by the donors in private, announced to the community, already fully baked and fully funded. No other community has had that happen to it. The programs have been created by stakeholders in the community and funding sought from within that community. And if you do not have deep engagement and investment across the community in doing this, if people in the community don't feel that these programs are really going to respond to that community's critical need, you're not going to have the support, the leadership support, the public support, and ultimately the funding to make them work.
I started by asking you what we can say 10 years after the promise was launched, and partly I asked that because in the book you say it's kind of tough to really connect the dots and say what we can say about the Kalamazoo community, the Kalamazoo economy, that is directly linked to the promise. And as you say, that's kind of important for other communities as they go forward. How is that still murky at this point? And I guess, are we getting closer to the point of having a more clear, bright picture?
I think we are. I think of the outcomes from Promise programs in three categories, and they happen to be the same three categories that communities express as their goals. The K through 12 outcomes are the ones that happen first. An enrollment boost in the school district, improved behavior, which my colleagues Tim Bardick and Marta Litowska have studied, higher test scores, which we've done some work on now at the Institute. It takes a little longer to see who's going to college, where they're going, how they're doing, and especially, are they completing? And the research released this summer by my colleagues Tim and Brad Hirschbein and Marta, which you have covered as well, this was 9 years out, and it was the first real trend data we had about college completion. It takes quite a long time for these impacts to filter through that system because it is such a long-term endeavor. The community development impacts are even later. And I guess another thing that makes them very, very hard to measure is when you see something going on in the schools and you do the kind of research that Tim and Brad and Marta did around post-secondary completion, you really can control for the promise effect. You can use a variety of methods to be sure that what you're seeing is the effect of the promise. As you move out into the community and the economy, you have many, many other things going on. So for example, one thing people really expected from the Kalamazoo promise was some improvement in the housing market in Kalamazoo. Well, that might have materialized, but we don't really know because a couple of years later, we encountered the 2008 financial crisis, which was very much a housing crisis. And so it's extremely difficult to pick apart causation when it comes to looking at these community-level effects. My colleague Tim is going to present some research next week about some housing and migration effects across multiple communities. We do seem to be starting to accumulate some evidence that place-based scholarship programs, not just in Kalamazoo but elsewhere, do serve as a magnet for households with young children. It's not a surprise. You would certainly expect that, but we're just now starting to be able to pick up that effect in multiple communities. So the research is evolving very, very quickly. We'll probably know more next week. It's that fast.
I want to come back to the title of this book, Promise Nation, and I wonder if you are implying or mean to imply that with all of the pressures we have at play right now, the cost of going to college, the rising student debt, the fact that you are much more likely to land into a career which pays well if you have some sort of post-secondary education, is that leading us all to a time where it will be more likely that a community has some sort of promise-based scholarship program than that they don't have it?
I do. I think there is so much innovation and experimentation right now around this issue. The landscape is changing very quickly. And that's one reason why I wrote this book, is to kind of lay out that landscape, what's happening at the state level. We now have two states, really one and one to some extent, Tennessee and Oregon, that have committed to making community college largely free for all of their residents. We have initiatives at the federal level. President Obama proposed an America's College Promise in his State of the Union last year. I don't think anyone expects it to become law anytime soon, but the conversation is really moving in that direction. We have some very broad-based non-governmental organizations and campaigns that are pushing this idea of making at least the first 2 years of post-secondary education tuition free. And so the conversation in the time that between my first book and this book, the conversation has changed dramatically. And what I really value about some of these initiatives is that they're not rigid, they're not one size fits all. They're quite encompassing and flexible, saying, whatever way communities can get there, or states or municipalities can get there. We have 10 communities in Michigan, 9 communities in Michigan that are Michigan Promise Zones, where students have at least access to the first 2 years of community college for free. This multiplicity and pluralism of approaches is really exciting. It's really promising. It's really American. We innovate at the local level, and then ideas bubble up. They bubble over to different states and different communities and up to the national level. And that's where we are right now in this period of policy innovation and experimentation around free college.
You've mentioned that to date, almost all of the Promise programs are funded with private money. Would it be another step if we started seeing more debate even about the idea that there should be some public money that is a public good that people should pay for out of their tax dollars?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that conversation is beginning. The Michigan Promise Zones themselves, one of the three funding pillars of those Promise Zones is a portion of the state education tax. In Tennessee and in Oregon, those statewide programs are being publicly funded. And there are a few Promise programs here and there that have some element of public funding. So it's harder, it's a tougher sell, but it's certainly where the conversation is going.
Michelle Miller-Adams, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, a political science professor at Grand Valley State University, and the author of Promise Nation, Transforming Communities Through Place-Based Scholarships. You can find links with more information at wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.